Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Good morning, everyone. We begin with two guests, one of whom is very familiar to all of you. Stephen Dubner joins us. He's takeaway contributor and co-author of the Freakonomics book and blog. And since we're talking about bad banks this morning, I thought it was just great to bring in someone who knows all about Freakonomics. I don't know if bad banks would qualify, but good morning, Stephen.
Good morning. My bank, Citibank, is terrible, if that helps.
If that helps, thank you. Also, Jane Sassine, Washington Bureau Chief for Businessweek Magazine, is here in the studio. Jane, thanks for coming in.
Morning.
So let's take apart this idea that has been floating around for a while, that was actually explicitly talked about by Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner. The Obama administration is considering the creation of some sort of separate institution, a so-called bad bank, to put all these bad assets we've heard about, mortgage-backed securities, credit default swaps, all kinds of things that they can't really price, stick them in one bank. And I can joke about this forever. I can imagine a bad bank where you go in and the money like comes out of your wallet, the ATMs rip you off as opposed to give you your money. But this is a really serious idea. Jane, explain.
Yeah, absolutely. The concern is all these assets are weighing down the banking system, and that's what's stopping lending. You know, as everybody's talking about, there's no lending going on. It's really hard to get a mortgage. It's really hard for businesses to get new loans and whatnot. And the reason is all these bad assets are keeping the banks from lending. And so in order to get that going and get the economy restarted and avoid enormous bank failures and, you know, the threat of a depression, they feel they have to move those off the banks and recapitalize them so that they can start, you know, putting money out into the economy again. Nobody really knows if it'll work, but that's the model they used, like in the SNL crisis earlier, right. The RTC model. That's the model they're basing it on.
Stephen, does this feel to you like a rhetorical flourish in some sense, like Al Gore's lockbox, remember the 2000 campaign, or something that just sort of says something that makes us feel better? But we're talking about billions of dollars here. I wonder if it makes people feel better.
Well,
really.
Look, I know nothing about actual banking. So,
Let's stipulate that at the top.
All right. I'm listening to Jane to try to
Neither
figure out.
Neither do many bankers at the
moment,
apparently.
Well, so I'm, as a layperson.
You're hired, Stephen.
As a layperson, I try to figure out what I do think is significant about it is since that toxicity remains the question mark that drives the bad psychology that's driving the market, then if you can isolate the toxicity in some way, then psychologically at least, the market and, you know, the laity may react well. That strikes me as the biggest asset to it. But I wanted to know, I just read something, I may be wrong on this. Did UBS try this kind of internally about a year ago to take within itself and isolate those toxic assets and deal with it? And
they may have. I'm not familiar with UBS specifically. But the problem is even if a bank tried to do that individually, it wouldn't work because the problem is a bank has a certain amount of capital and they can lend against that. So if a bank had $1 million in capital, they could lend out 10 times more than that. And these bad assets have really eroded their capital base. So in that example, if they had all these lousy assets, the capital of $1 million suddenly would become 500,000, and that limits how much they can lend. So as long as it's in the same institution, that's what's limiting lending right now.
I mean, the definition of a bank is your capital is put up against your liabilities.
Exactly.
And these toxic assets are liabilities. Explain how it actually would work. Would some paper be then given to some federal institution called the, you know, Bank of America.
Of
nastiness? And what would happen? Would that bank try to sell them to people? What would it do?
Yeah, essentially the government would have to set up a complete separate institution, and it would be on a size and a scale of something like vastly larger than the RTC. We've never actually seen it. And that's part of what's taking so long to figure this out is how exactly would you do it?
And would the federal government have to match the – so say it takes $1 trillion worth of worthless stuff. Does that mean that $1 trillion worth of taxpayer money has to go in there to back it?
Well, they would actually – what they're talking about doing is taking something like $100 billion of the, you know, the Treasury, the TARP funds, borrowing from the Fed or raising bonds. So they would have used leverage to take it up to $1 trillion, go out and buy $1 trillion of these assets off the bad banks. So basically they'd give the current banks cash for these bad assets. So that would replenish their capital, which would allow them to lend again. Right now they're talking about it needing up to $2 trillion to do this,
to
remove these assets.
What are the risks on the upside? On the downside, if it turns out that the assets are worth even less than we think, then the downside is pretty obvious. The taxpayers will
The taxpayers
will pay. On the upside, now I've read one objection is that if the assets turn out to be worth more, then the banks who surrendered them suffer. I don't follow that. Can you explain? Well, is that true?
They just feel bad. They don't suffer. Yeah.
Well, there is. If you look back at the RTC, they actually made a lot more money.
That's
off
the Resolution
of
Trust Corporation that dissolved the worthless assets from the savings and loan crisis.
And they went in. The government went in as all the banks failed. Then took over all these failed real estate loans. And because the government could hold them over time and manage the assets like an asset manager, eventually they got a lot more money back for those assets. And one of the theories—
Let me just stop you there. What does it mean to manage a troubled asset? Does it mean you're like calling people up and saying, pay me? I mean, what is managing an asset that is essentially worthless actually mean in practice?
Well, the question is, are these assets actually essentially worthless?
Right.
Because if you look at these pools of mortgage securities, say there's 100 mortgages in a pool, maybe 10% of those people are going to foreclose, people can't pay those, and they're bad.
The other ones they're paying
90%
on.
They're paying on,
right.
But the value that there has come down so much because nobody knows kind of which 10% is right.
Right.
So over time, if the government came in and brought in smart people to do this, in theory, 90% of those mortgages would still be good eventually. So if they hold them over 5 or 10 or the life of the mortgage, the value will come back and the government will actually make a lot of money back. That's the idea.
So one metaphor here is maybe archaeology, that the smart people would come in and actually figure out in all of the numbers and the codes and the account numbers who's behind each of these mortgages, figure out whether they're paying or not, and then actually make a value for this sort of thing and either sell it again or just sell the individual mortgages,
exactly.
Right? That's right.
Or pull them back together because they've all been sliced and diced into whole bunches of little pieces, and that's part of the problem. They're in these pools and they're all little bits and pieces, but if the government controlled them all, in theory, over time, they could pull them back together and do that.
Well, not only that, because the government, unlike a bank, has a lot of advantages over a bank, right? It's a market maker in a way that the bank is not, which would make Bernie Madoff the perfect guy.
Yeah.
But
Can we get him? I don't know if we can get him.
But also, they're also a lawmaker, right? So is it?
Well, because they can do these sorts of things in a way that the private sector can't right now. The other advantage is they can borrow money at a lot cheaper, so they don't need as much of a return. You know, again, they don't necessarily need a return at all. Whereas a private investor to go in and do this right now is going to need, you know, a 10 or 15% return to take the risks involved. Whereas the government, essentially the taxpayer, is taking a big risk but doesn't need to get a 15% return in order to do this.
Or maybe does, because we've been promised as taxpayers that these assets are going to be worth something. Barney Frank on this program said that the government may benefit from holding equity in this nasty stuff. Let's talk for a moment about bank nationalization, which is the other scenario that's been talked about. Is this an alternative to nationalization, or is it something we would do in addition to nationalization, or are they unrelated?
I think it's in addition. I think they're going to end up having to do some of both. They would like to avoid nationalization because the broader consequences of that are even larger. There's a lot of fear that if you ended up with the government owning the banks, there'd be a lot of political pressure to lend money to failing companies and the types of scenarios you can imagine are not good. That said, they do want to get some upside for if the government takes all this risk on. They want the taxpayer to benefit. So, one way of doing that is giving the taxpayer equity in these banks and, being a shareholder and benefiting. So there's going to be some combination. The really failed banks that for some reason they feel they have to keep alive could end up being nationalized, essentially like Fannie and Freddie at this point. I mean, they're going to have to let a lot of banks go, too. If they're insolvent, they're going to have to make some very hard decisions and let them go.
Is this feeling like Freakonomics to you a little bit?
I want to come up with the right name for this bank.
But maybe. Yes.
What about the last National Bank of America?
Last National, but that's good. National, right. All right, one last question here before we go, and it might be the most complicated, which is typical of me. If the Chinese are financing the debt that's going to support this institution, In my world on planet Earth, there's collateral that goes up to secure loans. Okay, if the Chinese lend, what's the collateral? Is it like my house? Is it like my laptop computer? Is it my kids? Is it like the school down the street? Is it the Capitol building?
That's actually a very good question. I think it's their faith that the U.S. government will continue if they pour out all these bonds that the government will continue to pay it back. Will they actually come and reclaim the Empire State Building? I don't know.
We might actually sell the Brooklyn Bridge to someone.
We might for a heck of a lot more than five beads.
Niagara Falls. Well, that's great. Well, Jane Sassine, thank you so much for coming into the studio, Washington Bureau Chief for Business Week Magazine, talking about the bad Mad Bank, Stephen Dubner of the Freakonomics blog and contributor here to The Takeaway. The reason you're here, though, is for something very close to your heart,
Go
right?
Steelers, yeah.
Go Steelers. I mean, yesterday we were all about the Arizona Cardinals.
I'm going to forgive you for that.
And you're not just talking about being a sports fan, right?
No, I'm not.
So this is sports fandom and a little science mixed in coming up?
Tiny bit.
All right. Stephen Dubner, thanks so much. Stay with us, and we'll be right back.
Freakonomics.